A 1-2 punch aimed at the world's largest telecom equipment maker. U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday banned China's Huawei and 70 of its affiliates from buying vital U.S. technology without special approval. In a statement, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said the ban was meant to, quote, prevent American technology from being used in ways that potentially undermine U.S. national security.
This driverless electric truck in Sweden began daily freight deliveries on public roads on Wednesday in what its creators have described as a world first. When full, the Einride T-Pod delivery truck is 26 tons of autonomous efficiency, with no space for a human driver, though a human operator can remotely control the vehicle if it gets confused.
It's the deal that won't go away. Theresa May will put her Brexit bill to Parliament again in early June, the one that's been rejected three times. It's just the withdrawal agreement, minus the political declaration on Britain's future ties with the European Union. The date that Britain has to leave, unless it revokes the Brexit clause and cancels the whole thing, has got that bit closer. It's this Halloween.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's May 16th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Here we are again with another edition of The Opening Bell, and thank you for tuning in this morning. We appreciate it. We've got a lot of things on the program for you today. We'll get to some of the numbers from the markets around the world in a minute. It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the program. Don Lloyd of Associated Bank is here with us. We'll have a good conversation about the trade dispute and what we should know about investing internationally in an era of volatility. We'll bring in Don momentarily for our Thought Leader conversation today. A little bit later in the program, Ryan Amoah will be here from Chicago Crypto Capital. Blockchain has seen, at least Bitcoin has seen a bump earlier in the week, continuing into today. Bitcoin is a little bit higher. We'll have a conversation about where it's going for the year and some other stories involving blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So that'll be at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move forward. But let's begin first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings today after stocks erased some losses yesterday on news that the president could delay tariffs on cars. The report said that the president would delay the implementation of auto tariffs by 6 months. Shares of several auto companies surged on the news. Still, it came as the Commerce Department reported retail sales in the U.S. fell nearly two-tenths of a percent yesterday. Also, we saw industrial production numbers a little bit more disappointing than we expected. This morning, as we look at the board, markets look like they're going to be flat at the open, as we see Dow futures up just 16 points. NASDAQ futures are just up 4 points. S&P futures are just up a couple of points. In Asia overnight, the Nikkei ending the day down nearly a half a percent, down 125 points. The Hang Seng and the Shanghai a little bit higher, the Shanghai by about a half a percent. In Europe, markets are mixed. In London, lower. In Germany, higher. In France, lower. And oil is trading at $62.40 a share, which is down about 38 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. The Federal Aviation Administration expects Boeing to submit its formal and final application as early as next week for a software update for the 737 MAX 8 that has been grounded worldwide since March 13th. The acting administrator of the FAA told a House Committee on Transportation yesterday that based on all of the information that Boeing has given the FAA, it is likely that prohibited order will be lifted once more testing is done and once the software fix has been put in place. A number of airlines have grounded the 737 MAX 8 at least until August in some locations. So it'll be quite a while before we see Boeing 737-8 MAX flying again. You heard in the opening montage, President Trump has declared a national emergency over foreign threats to U.S. tech. Trump issued an executive order that allows the Commerce Secretary to block transactions involving technology that poses an unacceptable risk to the national security of the United States. The order is expected to lead the U.S. banning Chinese telecom giant Huawei from doing business in this country. U.S. officials have claimed that Huawei is linked to the Chinese government. Huawei is the largest telecommunications company in China and the third largest maker of smartphones in the world. Let's begin with our thought leader conversation this morning. Don Lloyd is in this morning from Associated Bank. Don is the SVP of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange, and Derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, thank you for having me again.
Let's begin this morning with China and trade. What should we know? How is this impacting you this week with the renewed tariffs, the retaliatory tariffs? What should we know from an international standpoint of the markets?
Well, if it wasn't considered a tariff war, it certainly is now. And dominating the front line of the press and certainly the markets as well, everything's focused on it. And you've sort of seen that bleed through with volatility in the foreign exchange market and the equity market and interest rates and everything else. This is a little bit different than it has been over the last 6 months to 12 months in that this is much more public, it's much more vocal, and you've got China and the U.S. now that I don't see where either one can really back down. And that when you're in the limelight and the center stage like that, it really doesn't matter, you know, what's going on behind the scenes that we don't see about or we don't hear about. You've got two very strong leaders that have become very vocal all of a sudden, and I don't see where they're going to back. Either one's going to back down anytime soon, or who's going to blink first. Mm-hmm. So, I think the tariffs are going to be in place for a while. I don't think the market expects or anticipates that. I think they were going to look for a fairly quick resolution on this, whether it's, you know, the next month or two or three. But this can go on for the next 6 to 12 months, and let's see who's going to blink now. I do sort of have hope that there are discussions going on behind the scenes and back door that we don't know about, which I'm sure there are, but who's going to blink first? Who's going to lose face first?
Right. And, you know, the politics of this, and I know you don't like to talk about politics a lot, but you've got on one side a president who's up for re-election in a year and a half.
Right.
On the other side, a president who is not up for re-election probably ever. And then you have in China, I was reading how they're making this sort of a nationalistic thing where the government is trying to get everybody in the country to be like, rah, rah, China. And when that happens, it really takes it to a new level, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And how are the markets responding to this, and how are the markets digesting this? And you see it in the exchange rates. You see where the Chinese yuan is at the weakest level it's been in the last, 3 years, 4 years, you know, up at a 691. You see what the equity markets are doing. They're just going all over the place because they can't figure it out. In reality, you've got a weakening Chinese economy. It seems to be slowing down. Now, you're still slowing down. You're still talking 7% GDP growth. But you know, the latest numbers out there still show some tepid environment that's going on over there. And then you've got the U.S., which is sort of, you know, fumbling along at this 2% growth or whatnot. Then, you know, no very good price stability and, you know, flat yield curves and whatnot. We can be there for a long time. So the way I look at it is that they're holding their breath. Who can hold their breath the longest? And, you know, people have to still realize that China is only 60% of the size of the U.S. when it comes to GDP. Fastest growing, fastest changing, but it's still just about two-thirds the size of the U.S. GDP. So, you know, when it comes to who can hold their breath the longest, who needs whom most,
right?
I think we've sort of got the inside track on that. I'm more excited because this is still a strong economy here in the U.S., and we're going to have to purchase these things, whether it's going to be domestic or international. So the way I look at it is that one man's tariff is another man's opportunity. So look at all these other countries, I think, that are in great situations now to step forward, negotiate their trade agreements with the U.S. or update them or however you want to say it, and get their claws into it and sort of tap into this whole U.S. economy. So, you know, the world still turns. You know, this isn't the doomsday event. It's not the doomsday thing. It's, you know, two big Goliaths that are going at it a little bit. But there's a lot of other countries out there that can provide a lot of different things.
And speaking of those other countries, when you hear people talk about growth globally in those other countries, the risk is to the downside here with economic growth potentially slowing because we're fighting with China.
That's the knee-jerk reaction, you know, and that's certainly the way the market's trying to digest this is, you know, what's going to happen? All right, company profits are going to profit margins will narrow a little bit as these tariffs work their way through. Maybe prices will be pushed up a little bit. At the end of the day, the consumer is the one who pays for it. You know, wherever that consumer sits, those prices will be passed along. On a little bit longer term, if you want to look at it, it's an opportunity for the markets to become more efficient and for companies and industries to become more efficient. You know, if you see a tariff coming at you, which is nothing more than an increase in price coming at you, look for innovation, look for creativity to become more efficient around that, especially if you think it's going to be here for a longer term. That's where I think the free markets operate their best, is to sit there and unleash that creativity to say, how can we do something better in the face of increasing expenses?
Is there a chance that we might actually see some companies change the way that they do business and try to bring some of what they do back to the United States because of this?
Sure. But again, the markets are and businesses are extremely efficient. They'll do that if it makes good economic sense to them. And, you know, right now, everything was exported, or a lot of things were exported overseas because economically, and it made good economic sense for those companies, especially to their shareholders, to operate overseas. Sure, you know, you might see that come back on board over here to the U.S., which I think is the political position. Whether that's true or whether that's said, it's the political position, you know, to sit there and say, well, buy domestic, bring it on seas and, you know, put Americans to work. Whether that really happens or not, we'll see, you know, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, the dollars and cents are going to drive everything.
Yeah, I saw a figure yesterday. Just let's talk about textiles. 70% of all shoes in the United States are bought from China.
Yeah.
34% of all other clothing is bought from China.
Right.
Those are big numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you look at the cost of clothing, for example, it's been going down. I mean, clothing has been getting cheaper. So, you know, it feeds right into our whole price stability and low inflation figures. You know, the question becomes then is what is going to be the ramification of this over the longer term to our price stability and inflation impact. You know, you get a little bit of, you know, wages, cost of goods going up a little bit, and that's going to bleed through the consumer, certainly hit company profits. But on the other hand, you know, if I'm a glass half full kind of guy, the timing couldn't be better. You know, when you sit there and you look at how low our unemployment here is in the United States, you know, if companies have to change, or if we start to go into a weakness time or heaven forbid, a recession, you know, there's still some pretty good demand out there. There's still some jobs that need to be created, and there is no inflation. I mean, 2%, less than 2%. Price stability is there. So, you know, we're in probably a good time, if we're going to have a trade war, to have a trade war, or let's call it what it is. It's a renegotiation. China's different than NAFTA was. China is all about the intellectual property rights. I think that's the big driver behind it. And I think that's sort of what the administration wants to address, is this whole intellectual property rights. And they're going to use whatever lever they can to sit there and get them at the table to talk about
it. How does this change our global investment strategy?
Makes it more volatile. You know, it certainly gets money moving cross-border and internationally. You know, like I've said before, you know, it's just a big pool of money out there looking for some return with some amount of risk. And if anything, it's going to gin that up a little bit and get money moving. And we're already seeing that. You know, you're seeing money, you know, coming out of the equity market here in the U.S. You're seeing it go into China. You're seeing it go into Australia, New Zealand. You're seeing it go into treasuries, into the fixed income. And with as flat as the yield curve is, it looks like they're going farther out on the yield curve. So it's not short term, it's longer term type stuff. Especially with if you think interest rates are going to stay low. If we do go into a soft economy here in the U.S., you know, the Fed's not going to be in any rush to raise rates. And in fact, you make a case that stronger case for they might even be a little bit, you know, dovish and softening rates a little bit. You know, if they think these tariffs are going to tariff wars are going to last for a prolonged period of time and impact the economy in a negative way. China certainly will be accommodative in their interest rates. They'll be lowering interest rates to sit there and try to keep things going over there. The question will be, what will the U.S. do?
Well, we're all talking about China. They're still talking about Brexit in the United Kingdom. This is one of our favorite topics, isn't it?
It is. This is, if this was a movie, I think we'd be on sequel number 9 by now. This just continues to grow and keep going, and I don't think the book will ever end. You know, just sort of a real quick refresher. You know, they were supposed to have a decision the end of March. The United Kingdom never came about in determining a plan to exit the European Union, and Theresa May got an extension out to October 31st. You know, good for her. She got an extension. they're still sort of in this quagmire of negotiating. And unfortunately, she's losing more political clout. She's really dropping in the polls. And what's happening is that you've got a European Union Parliament election coming up May 23rd through 26th. What does that mean? 28 countries of the European Union are going to vote to who's going to represent their countries within the European Union Parliament. Okay, that's what it means. So you had Nigel Farage from the who used to be the UK Independent Party leader, UKIP. UK Independent Party, UKIP. And he was and became the European Union Parliament member for the UK. Well, he's back into the UK, and he's sort of reactivated the Independent Party, and it's now goes under the name of the Brexit Party. You know, so he is sitting there getting a lot of clout and a lot of pull on exiting. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of getting conversation going where Theresa May has sort of failed. And that sort of questions the whole thing about, you know, what's Theresa May going to do? Are they going to have a vote of no confidence after the European Union? So this thing, just like a novel, just keeps opening up to all these different paths. You don't know how it's going to resolve itself. There's a lot of people that said, going to get to October 31st. Let's have another right. extension. Let's have another referendum. You don't know where it's going. We're in not much of a different position than we were before March. And the markets are sort of paralyzed over in Europe because of it. Thank heaven the tariff wars are going on, because that's going to create flows going up into Europe a little bit more. Other than that, I think, you know, the market would be just sidelined until they can figure out what's going to happen here in a time where Europe doesn't need to be sidelined. I mean, they need to be showing some positive growth. But
yeah, the headline is that they don't think they're going to be able to do this by Halloween, and they're going to need another extension from the European Union.
Think about that. I mean, you know, there are so many similarities around what's going on over in the UK and here in the US, where, you know, a very large part of me sits there and says, the UK had a referendum. The people voted to exit. And now you've got political infighting going on that is sitting there with a group trying to do the will of the people and a group not trying to do the will of the people for political reasons. And it's like, the people have said, we want to leave the European Union. There is no second vote. You're the politicians that represent the majority of the people. You've had the vote. Now get on with it. Make a negotiation that's good, and let's exit the thing. Now, that's, you know, the simplest form that I can see. But the referendum happened. They want to leave.
Yeah.
Get on with it. There, you know, there is no debate on, do we really want to leave? Yes, you've had that vote. So that's where I sort of scratch my head on the whole thing.
It feels like somebody's delaying the game a little.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. You know, that's exactly right. So, you know, at the end of the day, the markets will like it, because the markets like chaos to some extent, because it creates, you know, especially traders, because it creates price instability. And we like it when prices move, because we can offer hedging. We can offer, you know, we can do positions. We can make money and, you know, on price movement. I mean, that's sort of what we like. We don't like quiet, boring markets. You know, that we don't do much in those. Long-term investors like that, but, you know, not the shorter-term market. We don't like that.
Speaking of the volatility, how do you handle this on a daily basis? What do you and your team do? Because, you know, when you come in and we have conversations, you seem very calm. I feel like you've calmed me down a little bit this morning on some of this stuff. Is this what you do with your clients as well?
Oh, yes. That's what we try to do. No, our role at Associated Bank, my team, we got about 14 people that work over there, and we do everything from interest rate to currency to commodity hedging. And we're identifying those companies that have price risk. They have currency exchange risk. They have oil and natural gas risk. They have interest rate risk. And we're either executing and pricing hedging strategies for them, or we're educating them. And, you know, there's a fair number of our clients who have never heard of hedging before. They know that prices move. They know that exchange rates move. But they don't really know what levers are available to them or how they work together. And that's the fun part of what we do, is that when we get in there and we can sort of educate and teach a little bit and sort of lead people to putting more tools in their toolbox when it comes to managing their risk. So, you know, a lot of it is, you know, you've got all these events, tariffs, Brexit, whatever going on. They create currency movements. The Chinese yuan going from a 5.8 to a 6.95. I mean, you know, the, what are you going to do about that? You know, is it significant to you? And well, what does that mean? Well, if it changed by 10%, what would that mean to your company? Would that matter to you? Well, yes, it would. No, it wouldn't. Okay, well, let's say, yes, it would matter. You know, here's a real number. You know, and it doesn't matter what that number is. It's all relevant to different companies, depending on your size. Are you controlling that? Are you just sort of keeping your fingers crossed? I hope the market moves my way, because that's no strategy. That's where we can get in, and we can sort of teach you these levers and teach you these tools and even put some ideas together for you to sit there and hedge and control that risk. So you can go to your owner, your president, your CFO, your board of directors, and when they ask you the question, gee, I just saw that currency change or that oil and natural gas price or that interest rate change by X percent. What is our exposure? You have an answer for them. What are we doing about it? You have an answer for them. And it's an amazing the number of U.S. companies that haven't addressed that, and they don't have an answer if they're asked those questions. And, you know, usually we don't get involved until there's a big move, and then somebody says, oh, my gosh, I'm being asked questions. Teach me. I need to know. I have to have an answer, and I don't know this. Because they've got 25 other things they're doing, and it doesn't become important until it becomes important. You know, they're not hard concepts. We can teach them, stick them in your tool bag. You got them. Set up a little plan, a little hedging strategy, and execute it. So when your board of directors comes to you and says, what are we doing about it? You're ready for them. Got it. Got that under control. That's what we do, and that's what we like doing. So.
And if you need Don Lloyd's emergency phone number, what would that be? How would we get a hold of you to do that? Is there a bat phone?
There is a bat phone, and that number is 866-524-8836. Again, 866-524-8836. I'd like to say I'm there 24 hours a day, but I'm not. I have to sleep sometimes. And but, you know, we'll always have a live person pick you up. You're never going to get a voicemail or anything like that. We're the markets. We never sleep.
Don, great conversation as always. Thanks for coming in.
Steve, thank you.
Don Lloyd is the SVP of Capital Markets, the Foreign Exchange and Derivatives at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We're going to continue our chat with Don after the bell this morning. Post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. Bitcoin surged past $8,000 earlier this week, hitting its highest mark since last July. This morning, as we look at the market numbers, it's just below 8,000 at 78.9929, which is down about 252. Let's bring in Brian Amoah this morning to talk a little bit more about the resurgence of Bitcoin. Brian is the co-founder of Chicago Crypto Capital, a blockchain and cryptocurrency investment advisory firm here in Chicago. Brian, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning.
Let's talk a little bit about why we saw this jump in Bitcoin earlier this week. Any thoughts behind it's a jump? It's a pretty good jump this week.
Yes, it was an amazing jump. And I suppose the last time Bitcoin had a surge where we weren't really sure, it was more of a retail-based fear of missing out. A lot of this surge has been a result of a lot of ecosystem and institutional things behind Bitcoin. A lot of big players moved very big behind the Bitcoin market. We saw a real surge in price as a result.
The idea is that there is more street cred, if lack of a better way to describe it, coming to Bitcoin, or more of a street cred coming with more of the companies, big companies, and I know there are a few, and we'll get to talk about a few of them coming up, that have taken another look at Bitcoin. As that happens, it gives people a little bit more comfort with investing in this area, doesn't it?
Yes, I think one of people's biggest concerns with Bitcoin was, you know, is it purely speculative? Is this someone just chasing price action? Are these people just really trying to make money? But what we're seeing with this surge is that Bitcoin really can be used to be added to our normal economy without being disruptive, by just being a normal progression for a technology. And we'll talk about some of these companies later, but it's no longer just a theoretical. Bitcoin can be used as the store of value. Now it can be used as a software application as well, and a way for people to spend in the everyday life.
Yeah, and Brian, I know that there are probably people listening this morning, and I know you're well aware of this too. We saw the Bitcoin at $20,000 in December of 2017, and that's when a lot of people, I think, came in and took a look at it and were like, okay, this might be kind of cool, but then pulled back on it, and we saw that huge drop. Has that left sort of a little bit of a fear in people's minds, and do you think?
You know, to be honest, I believe it has. You know, I think, like you said, a lot of times that many people had first heard about it was when we were hitting that 15, 16, 17,000 in the news all the time. So they just got in at really, you know, a point where the market really, to be honest, didn't sustain that those type of levels. So it's natural that a lot of retail investors are going to have a sore taste in their mouth, but I guess that's the nature of markets, as you probably know.
Right, and as we look at these numbers again this week, it feels like maybe we're coming out of that. I mentioned a couple of the big names that are coming to play here. One of them, Fidelity Investments, says it's going to start buying Bitcoin and using this as an asset for institutional customers. That's going to be a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Fidelity has been long supportive of cryptocurrencies, and, you know, that announcement was a big one, certainly. But I think more on this recent surge has been Microsoft's entry into the digital ID area. And then also another company, the Winklevoss brothers. Maybe you probably remember those two twins from that movie.
Yeah.
They're behind a project that allows people to spend Bitcoin in Whole Foods, Crate and Barrel, some of the biggest names, without even having to, you know, use Bitcoin. They're using the app just like their Apple Pay. So this is the first time you're seeing the actual retail use of Bitcoin without having to be an expert. You can just walk in there, pull out your app, and pay. The retailers don't even know you're using Bitcoin.
Yeah. And that's probably what's making people a little bit more comfortable. And we all are very familiar and comfortable with Apple Pay. You mentioned Whole Foods there. Crate and Barrel, Nordstrom, Amazon to own Whole Foods, a couple others are involved in this. Having big names like that behind this is a pretty big deal.
It is. You know, and when you have names like that, you know, the technology gives people comfort. But also for these retailers, they're not overhauling their old systems. It's the same scanners they use for Apple Pay and such. So they're not investing in a whole new technology. It's the same business as usual for them, which is pretty exciting for us.
Right. So as you, I know part of what you do, and maybe you could tell us more about Chicago Crypto Capital, is you have these conversations with people, offer advice and research. What is the speech that you give potential new investors in crypto?
Well, my old first speech is, first of all, safety first. You know, there's a lot of people out there with a lot of stories and a lot of, you know, unfortunately bad actors. So, you know, what I tell everyone is this: don't rush into this. If you really believe that, you know, this space is somewhere where you have to be, you don't have to buy the first thing you see the first time someone tells you. Take your time and do research. It's a new area, but just like you do research in your traditional markets, whether you enter your equities or real estate or whatever investments, make sure you know what you're getting into. And that's probably the biggest thing an average investor can do if they're looking at this market.
Yeah, and I know you have some advice here, too, on your website for people getting into this, and I know the SEC does, too. Is that one of the things, too, we should look at, whether or not there's any protection offered by the SEC or other federal laws when it comes to Bitcoin when we start investing money? Is that one of the key considerations?
Yeah, it's always going to be a key consideration, you know, but as an individual investor, they just have to protect themselves, knowing that there's going to be bad actors at all times, which is why information, you know, the government can always do what they can to do, but usually when you're talking about that, that's after the fact. The government's going to step in after you've lost your money and usually don't want to get in there. So once again, arming yourself with information is usually the best thing you can do.
As we, those of us who are in equities and other places, look at what's happening with trade and the global scene and the volatility there, does that translate over to the crypto market, or is it a little bit more stable? Is the noise filtered out more when it comes to crypto?
You know, I would say that, you know, there are some skills that translate to. I mean, I've seen some people, you know, who have never looked at crypto charts, you know, pull up maybe a traditional, you know, Fibonacci or moving average and, you know, recognize some of these levels very, very clearly. But with a new market, remember, we don't have quite the liquidity in some of these markets that you may see, you know, with some of these. So the price action movement, some individual actors still can have an outsized influence. We are still at a new stage. So So there's some similarities, yes, and but there are some differences between the markets.
Where do you see not only Bitcoin going over the next couple of days, but do you have a crystal ball where you can tell us where you think it might be headed in a couple of weeks, a couple of months?
You know, if I had a crystal ball, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now, and or maybe calling you from my island. But I will say this, you know, volatility is probably going to be a part of Bitcoin for a bit. But I think going forward, you're going to see a lot more, you know, the Microsoft announcement of their digital identity is really the big news. It's probably gotten the least play. But to get a big company like that getting into this, look out for when they roll out, you know, this new digital ID platform and other institutional action announcements like that. So I would see a little bit more of upward pressure based off of how the ecosystem is looking. But at the end of the day, you know, no one really knows.
Yeah, and it would be nice, too, to get some more people on board with this. I know that early on in the talk of the phase of Bitcoin, there were some researchers who were not so sure about this. Are you aware of any of those folks changing their minds on this at all? And any other institutional, when I say institutional, I mean research-oriented academic types coming around on board?
I do. And, you know, I just came back from the biggest Bitcoin conference. I just flew in from New York, and it was much different than what we've seen in the past few years. Before, it was, you know, the kids in the basement with this great ideas, and everyone had a new, it was almost like a startup element. This year, it's your Deloitte, it's your Microsoft, it's your IBM, you know, it's all the really big guys coming in there. And it's really more of an enterprise solution almost feel for it. So it's less this idea some of these academics have, well, Bitcoin could never really enter the market. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of these ecosystem solutions come in to resolve some of these issues that these guys had. And we've had some very public, you know, backtracks on some of it.
Yeah. So if people have questions and they want to get more information from you and maybe even think about putting some investments on this, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. If you have any questions on blockchain, cryptocurrency, or anything of that nature, give us a call at 312-600-1842 or visit us on our website at chicagocryptocapital.com, www.chicagocryptocapital.com.
Brian, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. Have a great morning.
You too. Brian Amoah, co-founder of Chicago Crypto Capital. Again, chicagocryptocapital.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up 84 points now, nearly a third. S&P futures up nearly a third as well. Same story over at the NASDAQ, up nearly a third as well, heading to the opening bell. Now, agriculture and commodities with that, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Today, we saw prices in the grain market move higher, but then back away by the close. The July wheat contract ended unchanged. The July corn contract ended unchanged. And July soybeans only up 3¾ cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the July lean hog contract up $1.82 a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract up 2 cents, and the May feeder cattle contract down 22 cents a hundredweight. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, May 16th. Housing starts for April are due out this morning. Building industry analysts forecast a 6.2% increase in housing starts. Also today, the weekly report on first-time claims for unemployment benefits is out. The experts see 220,000 workers filing initial jobless claims, 8,000 fewer than the previous week. Also on the calendar today, as we look ahead to this business day, we will see the Philadelphia Fed Business Outlook Survey, the EIA Natural Gas Report, a couple of Fed speakers out as well, including Neil Kashkari, the Fed Balance Sheet Money Supply Report coming as well. On the earnings calendar, Walmart set to release earnings before the opening bell today. Investors will want to know if the company can rein in the massive cost of battling Amazon. NVIDIA and Pinterest will release their results after the U.S. markets close. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, May the 16th.